Welcome back to the Mom with Distinct Show. I'm Shirley Nordrum, and today my guest is, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sharon Nordrum.
Oh.
Yes, I'm Shirley's sister.
Yeah, same last name. We must be related. Today we thought we'd get together and talk to you guys about bees. We have conversations about bees all the time, because I tend to want to have native bees, and
I had bees once.
She had bees once, but always has a dream of being a beekeeper. You'd like to have bees again. I know you do. But
well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. The problem that I have with wanting bees is, well, naturally I like bees, but I don't want to send my bees off to Missouri or California. And the other option is to kill them before winter. Well, that's a dilemma.
Yeah.
It's a moral compass thing, and I'm working with it, trying to figure out where I want to be.
You know, they produce food, right, though? So, you know, you have to harvest a deer at the, you know, in the fall to get you through. You have to, you know, take fish to get you through. So, and those things, you know, die. You're not a vegan or anything. So, you know, if you have bees, and then, like, there's our friends, Milton, Jamie Lee, they only are having bees every other year because they get enough honey. So
there's that way of doing it too, because yeah, we as a family don't use that much honey. I got 5.5 pints last summer, and we have 5 pints sitting on the shelf. You know?
Well, I think we could probably use it a little more in our baking if we put our mind to it. But yeah, we are conservative in our honey use. But, I mean, there's lots of reasons to, if not have honeybees, to, you know, have a garden and make habitat for pollinators.
Exactly. I'm bringing in monarchs, bringing in our mason bees, making gardens and a habitat that's hospitable to those creatures, I think is probably more important than having the honeybees. Because, well, look around. A lot of people have honeybees. You can always go and buy honey.
You can. They say that, you know, 1/3 of our food is pollinated by bees, by honeybees. 70 of the world's most popular crops, vegetables, fruits, and nuts are pollinated by honeybees. So that's the big thing about honeybees, is that they're pollinating commercial crops and they're producing large amounts of honey. So they have this agricultural tie to them. But here in Minnesota, we have 400. I know, I'm the nerd, I'm the geek of the between the two of us. We have 400 native honeybee species. Mm. Or not honeybee, but 400 bee species. Yeah, none of our bees produce honey. So
okay, so you say that honeybees are pollinating all of these commercial crops and everything, but how are they figuring in all the butterflies and that? Because butterflies are a big pollinator.
They are not factoring them in. They are saying that honeybees are the best pollinators on the planet compared to all the other pollinators. That a single honeybee, now this is going to blow your mind.
Oh, well. Okay, should I hold on to my skull or something?
You should hang on to your skull, because they say that a single honeybee can pollinate 300 million flowers a day. 300 million flowers a day. That's crazy.
That is a lot of flowers.
And I don't know who measured this honeybee.
Who walked around this honeybee?
Who counted as that guy went, you know, like,
do they have a little tracker that they put on this honeybee? A little tiny leg band?
I don't know, but that's from Greenpeace. I don't know. I trust Greenpeace.
I do, too.
I didn't know that Greenpeace was into honeybees, but, you know.
Well, Greenpeace is into just about anything that has been threatened, and honeybees with all the pesticides and everything are threatened.
That's an interesting fact. So there's this group called Be Informed. Be Informed Partnership. And they said that beekeepers across the country are continuing to lose their colonies. 44% of their colonies were lost last year. That's up 3.5% from the previous year. and up about 10% from several years back. So still, even though there's a lot of awareness, a lot of research, a lot of work going on around honeybees, last year alone we lost 44%. But that's commercial beekeepers. Small farm beekeepers are not losing their colonies.
Well, not to that extent, probably.
They're not losing their colonies. Small beekeepers claim that they are not losing their colonies.
So that means that all their neighbors are not using any pesticides?
Well, that's the thing, is like, you know, they said that...
What about all the highway departments that are spraying along our ditches and stuff like that? Is that, that's not impacting small bee farmers?
Apparently not. According to this bee-informed partnership, a guy, a single small bee producer, knew a guy... You know how that goes in Minnesota, a guy knew a guy that lost his honeybees, but that was because a neighbor moved in next to him and was applying pesticides. So, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, are the pesticides that they're spraying in the ditches different than the pesticides that are being applied to our food crops? Is it, you know, because it's that nicotinoid factor in the pesticide that's killing the honeybees. And nicotine has been... a pesticide for forever. Indians used nicotine, you know, tobacco to kill insects that were impacting corn and things like that. So, but you know, you want to really get down into the science of it. Did natives know when to apply nicotine in the flowering process, or before or after the flowering process, that we didn't have the problem with it, or
is it the pesticides that they're now using on the tobacco plants impacting?
I don't know.
You know, using that.
We're not having source. A very good show here. We're asking more questions. We're asking more questions than we're providing information. But you know, having a conversation about this is—that's
the way our conversations go. Though usually we do ask way more questions.
So you did have honeybees 1 year. What was, you know,
how... I did have honeybees for 1 year, and it went well. I learned a lot. Really learned that you should have a empty hive sitting next door to the one that has bees in it, so when they swarm, they, like, don't go into your chimney or the under the roofing or that type of thing. They'll go into the other hive and then get sent down to Missouri later. But it was interesting. I actually had a good hive. I had friendly bees. I know that another person that got hives the same time that I did, he got angry bees. I was glad they went to him and not me. But all in all, it was an experience that I won't forget.
I think you should have bees again. I think you should do the every other year deal with the bees and just, like, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do at the end of the season. But it was nice having the bees. And then the thing is, like, your bees swarmed.
Yes, they did. I wasn't there to see it. I wish that I would have seen that swarm. It sounds like it was interesting.
It was. I came home after the swarm, and I was sitting in the yard. I don't know what I was doing, but I thought a car was coming down the road. We live off the road. I wish we lived off the grid, but we just live off the road. And you could hear, I thought it was a car coming, and I was like, well, it's really taking that car a long time. And then it kind of stopped, and we have lilac bushes you couldn't really see. And I thought, what are they doing? And I went walking over there, and that's when I realized that the swarm had returned. And it was a strange experience because the hair on my arm stood up from the buzzing. I don't think it was fear at this point, because I wasn't afraid. It was this buzzing and this vibration, and the hair on my arm stood up. And I was trying to see them, because they were in a silver maple tree. And there were so many leaves that I was like, where are they at? And I'm looking. And then I realized, holy cow, if it's creating that kind of sound and that kind of vibration, that's a lot of bees. I don't care what it looks like. I'm leaving.
Take cover. Where was my bee helmet with the netting on it?
I just became frightened and left. But they say that a single hive can have 60,000 bees in it.
My hive, I don't know how many bees I had in my hive. I do know that it was a lot. When Perry came out and looked at it, he said that, yes, they were producing really well. They were producing a lot of honey, too. But when they swarm, They took a lot of that honey. I'm not exactly sure how they carry it away on their little legs. I don't know that science of it. I didn't get into that part of it. Like Shirley said, she's the nerd. She would have looked that up.
I will look that up.
I just contemplate it and then I move on with my life. But yeah, I got 5.5 pints of honey out of that hive that swarmed late, so they didn't have a whole lot of time to start producing more honey for us. So if they hadn't swarmed, I probably would have ended up with 10 or 11 pints, because Perry said that they do take about half with them when they swarm.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I know Milt and Jamie said that they got 10 pounds of honey, so they were measuring it in pounds, not
pints.
So I don't know what that equates to, but, you know, 1 year, and his swarmed a couple times, actually, before he bought some that hung around.
Uh-huh.
And they got 10 pounds of honey. Well, they, you know, they have all their Christmas presents for the next couple of years and all the honey they can eat. So they're good. They're not going to have bees, but you know, you can have habitat is important, whether you're having honeybees or whether you're, you know, gonna create habitat for local pollinators. So I really think it's important to plant correctly. If, you know, you're thinking about getting honeybees, or if you want to help the native population, either one, you're going to need to plant, right?
Yes, you are.
And you're going to want to plant your
early bloomers, like your lilacs, or your apple trees.
Crab apple trees, too.
Yep, crab apple trees. Well, if you're planting apple trees, you really should have crab apple tree around.
Right.
Because they say that they have blooms that last a lot longer than your apple trees.
Actually, I know this.
Yes, I know you know this. Told me this, but, you know, it's like...
The crab apple tree blooms for a month, whereas the apple tree blooms for a week, so...
Well, you know what? I'm going to check that out next year with our crab apple tree, because I don't think it had flowers on it for a whole month.
It rained really hard and knocked them off this year, but yeah, they do.
See, she has an answer for everything.
I do.
Of why our crabapple tree did not have blooms.
It was a heavy rain. It knocked knocked the flowers right off.
If you say so. I do want to put this in there. Buy your flowers from your locally owned greenhouses or from your neighbors if they produce extra flowers and stuff like that, rather than buying from commercial. Because of the pesticide issues, and I did not know that, and I did buy flowers from a commercial place, and when I found out about it, well, sad to say, I killed my flowers, but I figured it was better a flower than a bee, okay?
Really? Well, how did you make this conclusion that it was okay to kill the flowers and not the bees?
Well, the flower didn't move, and the bee did, and the flower didn't produce anything other than some beauty, and the bee did. So
interesting moral decision.
It was! You know, I have to make all these moral decisions, and sometimes they just eat at me, and so I do the best I can.
So some other early bloomers would be like hawthorn, wild geraniums.
Trillium.
So, willows, if you got willows. Yeah, yeah. Trillium. Then you got to move into your mid-season bloomers.
Yeah. If you want to plant bulbs, you can put in crocuses. Those are an early bloomer.
And you can look all this stuff up online, like early, mid, and late season bloomers. The Minnesota DNR has a great website about bees and native pollinators.
Oh, cool.
And so they actually have a list on there of early, mid, and late season bloomers that you can plant in your yard. But, you know, if you just plant your flowers and your vegetable gardens and you got some lilacs and some crabs, you know, you're pretty good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, interestingly enough, I had a friend of mine last week that asked me if a certain plant flowered. And I was quite surprised because, you know, they're out in the woods quite a bit and they do, you know, they sugar, they rice, they know stuff. But I think they forgot their basic science about angiosperms and gymnosperms, that unless you're a gymnosperm, which is a conifer, which is a evergreen, all plants have to flower to propagate. Which, you know, that's kind of early science, but I guess you forget it as life goes on if you're not...
Well, flowers on certain things, they look different, too. It doesn't look like, you know, a five-petaled flower.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's, you know, it was flowering at the time, but it didn't appear to look like a flower. So
probably,
is it really a flower?
Probably like the basswoods, you know, some of the trees, they have the catkins.
Uh-huh.
That are, you know, that's a flower.
That's a flower for them.
And I actually heard about a guy that he gets all his honey from basswood. He takes his hives out when the basswood is blooming.
Yeah, you told me about that.
And he has pure basswood honey.
I wonder what it tastes like.
I don't know. He's up by, Inger S. Lakeway. I might have to go buy a jar because I heard it was good.
Yeah.
But, usually when you get honey, you have a mix, but...
Our honey tasted surprisingly good.
I don't know why you were surprised.
Well, I always... Okay, this is me. And I always thought that honey... You needed a lot of clover for honeybees. I don't know why.
Probably the government told you.
I don't know if it was something that I heard when I was little, and I only took, you know how you're little and you're eavesdropping on adults' conversations, and they could have possibly been talking about bees and clover.
Yeah.
And so I thought you needed clover for honey, I thought that's what they mainly got their nectar from.
No.
So... I was surprised, actually, when I tasted our honey and how good it was. And everybody that tasted it really liked it, too.
So we had a lot of lilacs
and apple blossoms.
Apple in our honey. Yeah. That was good.
And then the neighbor next door, he had a nice little garden. So he helped contribute. Hey, maybe I should take him a jar of honey. I never thought of that.
You should.
I should. With his squash and his carrots and corn and all the vegetables that he planted.
And so you got to have good food source, because honeybees really don't fly, or honeybees or any bee or any pollinator, they have to expend so much energy that it's best if they don't have to fly
too far.
More than 300 feet or whatever to feed.
Yeah.
That's like the optimal distance for them to travel. And then the other thing they have to have is water. And just looking at it around on the DNR website, I noticed that White Earth is in an extreme drought right now.
Oh, are they?
They are. I think we're on the verge of it.
The White Earth River didn't look like a river to me.
It looked like a creek. So, they got to have water, and it's just like their food. You don't want them traveling too far to go have to get that. So, even just a small dish out in the yard, a shallow bowl type deal.
Take a cake pan.
A cake pan.
It's too hot to bake right now anyways.
And put some rocks in it, right?
Yep.
So they can light on the rocks and fill it with water, and you can provide a water source for these small insects and things that really need water too.
Yep.
We got an old bird bath at a rummage sale, and that's our insect water. We put some rocks in there, and we put the water in there, and you'll occasionally see a bird go over there, but we have the bird bath water thing, too, so
yeah.
They prefer the deeper water, but, that's a good way to provide some water for them. And then our local pollinators, they got to have some homes. And so if you're getting into the mason bees, which I really am interested in, you can actually make homes for them.
You can. And I think that we should do that with that. The big old tree out in front that fell over, that I'm not sure which kind of pine that was. I think we should drill some holes in there.
Drill holes in there?
Yeah. And it's easy enough to hit, there's a lot of dirt at the base of it. So it's easy enough to turn that into some mud for them. And...
So make, that,
make them a home.
Didn't you make a mason bee thing at... Where was that at?
I did make that at the Indigenous Farmers Conference.
Oh, okay.
That was held at Maple Leg this year. Yeah, it was bamboo. We took different size pieces of bamboo. Some of them had holes all the way through. Others didn't. And then took and put like 10 or 12 of those together. And then wrapped a rubber band around it. And then you just go and stick that into the crook of the arm of a tree. The Y.
Mm-hmm.
What's that called?
The why.
The why. Oh, good. I had it right. Anyways, you just put that up there and make sure it's secure in there so it doesn't fall or anything, and then have some mud at the base of the tree.
That's key, right? You got to have the mud at the base of the tree.
Yeah, you got to have mud for them, because they go in there and they lay their egg, and then they put mud in there to encase that.
So I understand.
Pupa? Is that what it is?
Yeah, larva, pupa. So I understand that they go in there into the little tube. They have just enough pollen on them to feed that one little larva while it's in its stage of transition. So they take just a little pollen ball and they lay the egg with the pollen ball, and then they seal that entrance with the mud from the base of the tree.
Yeah.
And they'll lay up to 5 deep in one little straw area. And that the males, the ones that turn into males, are closest to the front, and they break free first. Now, why that is, that's kind of like the temperature, you know, the turtles laying their eggs, and based on the temperature, you'll have more males than females. I mean, I don't know how these things happen, but so the males burst free first, and then, you know, but they only have enough food in there to get them through that one little point.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder why the males come out first.
Oh, they're hungrier. You know how it is feeding boys.
Yep. 15 pancakes later, are you still hungry?
So when you have honeybees, I wanted to go back to the honeybees for a little bit. They have certain predators. If you have the hives, they have the bears who want the honey. Uh-huh. And then the other big predator would be skunks who want the bees.
And I didn't have a problem with either one.
I think it's because it was in the front yard. And we have not had a bear around our home for a very long time. It's sad. We have someone who hunts the land behind us for bear. And I think that he has taken the bear from our area. But we also didn't have any problem with skunks. And I heard another beekeeper say that he was worried about wasps killing his bees. And it was a conversation between two beekeepers, novice beekeepers, but a lady said she thought that they were breeding bees to be less aggressive because more people want bees, so they don't want, you know, mean bees, and they were breeding the aggression out of the bees because ordinarily if a wasp or something came up to the nest, all the bees would just swarm him and kill him, but they're becoming so docile that yes, wasps will have an opportunity to prey on bees. That's crazy.
That is. And that's another example of man changing a species to suit their own needs.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And I don't like that. I don't know who gave you the right to play God and to change things like that. But that's a whole nother show.
Yeah. So besides the mason bees and the other bees in Minnesota, the other things that people may not realize that our pollinators are your moths and your butterflies. You've talked about butterflies.
Yeah, most people only think of the monarch, too. And it's like, there are so many butterflies. We have so many butterflies.
You know, I don't know how many butterfly types we have in Minnesota.
The nerd that you are and you don't know
I don't know that.
Oh, my God, you better look that up after I leave. I'll expect an answer on that when I get home tonight.
Mm-hmm. Moths, they don't think about moths because moths are out at night and they just think of them, you know, getting hit by the zapper. But they're pollinators.
They are.
Flies. Flies are pollinators.
Do they make a very good pollinator, though? Because their little legs are not hairy.
Well,
usually you have to have hairy legs.
Here's the deal. They do have fuzzy legs. You haven't looked close enough.
I'll have to look at the next one I've swatted.
Well, a lot of them, especially, are pollinators of the open flat flower.
Okay.
Because they go there to get a drink. They like the nectar. And they're pollinating by doing that, by visiting. So, you know, some flies are very good pollinators.
Okay.
Wasps and those guys are also pollinators.
Uh-huh.
And beetles.
Beetles. What about your dragonflies and your mayflies?
I haven't heard anyone talk about them as pollinators. A lot of people don't think about, you know, hummingbirds are pollinators.
They are.
And in some places, bats are very good pollinators, but the bats in Minnesota, we only have 7 types of bats in Minnesota.
Oh, I thought we only had 2. I thought we just had the 2 brown.
No, we have the little brown and the big brown, which are the ones that are most common. I think there's a couple of other types of bats, too, but they're not pollinators in Minnesota, but other places, they're incredible pollinators. And, you know, people don't think of the wind.
The wind is a huge
pollinator, especially for those gymnosperms. Those remember we talked about that earlier. The evergreens. That's mostly how those gymnosperms get pollinated, by wind.
Yeah.
But wind is a great.
What
pollinator.
About caterpillars? And are they any kind of a pollinator?
I think they just eat leaves. I don't think they're pollinators at all.
I don't know, because what about ants?
Oh, ants are pollinators.
Because you really see ants on peony flowers.
Yeah, and you see squash blossoms and stuff too.
Yeah,
you
see
really
lots
around.
Of ants.
Ants are pollinators. A lot of ants live a life very similar to bees in colonies.
Yes, they do.
With your worker ants, and then they have a queen as well.
They do.
And I've heard a story story about the queen leaving. I've never seen it, but I've heard she leaves and has wings and flies out of the colony.
So that was an ant that I saw that one time.
You saw a flying ant?
I did. I saw a flying ant, and I was like, pretty sure that I wasn't drinking anything I shouldn't have been, but I was like, that looked like a flying ant, and yeah. I wondered about it, and yeah, now that you mention it, it was like,
cool, you saw it once.
I did see a flying ant.
So they ants are good pollinators too. So yeah, there's lots of things out there. There's lots of ways that you can help in your yard by planting and watering and creating a habitat.
Just go out there and spread some wildflower seeds, you know? Then you don't have to mow as much either.
You could buy those and in packages in the flower stores, you know, Minnesota Wild Seed Mix. Yeah. Another good place to check with for wild seed mix would be your local NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service.
Yeah.
Usually in your courthouse or wherever. They oftentimes will sell those kind of mixes. Can be a little on the spendy side, but you probably should only have to do it once. So,
well, you should only have to do it once.
Yeah.
Unless you mowed it all down.
Yeah, and then don't mow. You know, mowing is a thing that just irritates the heck out of me.
Our yard is probably a little extreme in the not mowing.
Well, right now it is, because the mower's broke.
But even when the mower is working fine, we don't cut our grass so that it's what is that cities wanted 3/4 inch high and no more. And I think that makes a nice habitat for everything, for your pollinators, for your birds, for your toads, frogs. You can walk into our yard and it's like a little peaceable kingdom. And it is.
It's nice. We got a lot of stuff going on in our wild domestic going on in our yard.
Yeah, we do, and it's pretty. You know, mm-hmm. Tree falls over. Well, okay, there's a fallen tree in the yard.
Mow around it for a couple years.
Yeah, you know, what can I do with that fallen tree? Right now, I could drill some holes in it and make a nice home for the mason bees.
There's so much, you know, harvesting of timber and making gravel pits and mowing ditches. There was one time when I remember the DNR was saying don't mow the ditches because it was habitat for all these different kinds of animals, and now everybody's mowing the heck out of their ditches. So you know, sometimes you just gotta help out a little bit in your yard is one way to do that, and you know, be grateful to these guys because they pollinate so much of our food and just make the world a prettier place.
Yeah, if it wasn't for them, look at all the foods that we would lose.
Yeah,
or
the things we would miss. Think about not seeing a monarch. I mean, I remember a couple of years back, there was a lot of talk going around on Facebook about, has anybody seen a monarch yet?
Exactly.
And I saw a few this past year, but worried about them.
I have this one memory from when I was growing up, lived up in International Falls, right in town, and the neighbor down at the end of the block, his name was Tommy Thompson, and he had this big old flowering bush. I don't even know what kind of a bush it was. It had little red berries on it. But the monarchs came in, and that bush, it looked like that bush was moving. There were so many monarchs on that bush, and everybody was out there, and we were just watching those monarchs sitting on that bush because they had traveled so far and they were resting now. There had to have been 1,000 of them at least.
Maybe more.
And then when they did take off, it was this black and orange cloud going up of these monarchs, and it was so beautiful. It was the only time I ever saw anything like that. How about spiders?
Spiders? There's spiders that, like, ground spiders around your garden. You would think that they would be.
Yeah.
You know, we just wanted to visit with you today about the bees, about the pollinators, a bit about what we're doing in our lives with gardens and making the habitat for these guys so that they're around for a while. We've got a little apple orchard that we're planting. We have nine apple trees right now.
Nine apple trees and
a number of crab apple trees.
Yes.
Yeah.
We actually have 10 apple trees because somehow, some way, an actual apple tree sprouted from the one crab apple tree.
I think someone grafted that on there.
How could that possibly... Who would come in and graft? The tree was not there until 2002. We have been on the property since 1994. So...
The grafting fairies.
The grafting fairies.
Came in and grafted.
It was a grafting gnome. The fairies would have too hard of a time to do that, so it had to have been a gnome. Came, and he grafted this apple tree onto the crabapple tree. Actually, it's an ornamental crabapple tree, too, because you cannot eat the crabs off that one. on.
Mm-hmm. Provides nice blossoms, so
far. Oh, beautiful. Long, long. I believe that that one is a 30-day. The one that sits right in the middle of the yard, I don't think that there's 30 days worth of blooms on that tree.
Well, we shall see.
We shall see next year. And I will take into account any storms that come along.
So we have to, we have to take care of those apple trees, too. You can't just plant an apple tree and walk away. There's certain things, you have to provide a little fertilizer. Now, you know what I found that was interesting is I've been looking into chicken tractors because, we have fowl. And we had a problem with a fox. Last year, that was the first time in, 20 years of free-ranging fowl that we had a fox problem. And so I think he's still around. And
I do too.
I think we're going to remove the food source for a couple of years and not have free-ranging chicken, but I'm building a couple of chicken tractors for the chickens and the ducks. If you park a chicken tractor over an area and you leave it sit there for 2-3 days and you got 12 chickens in there, you've provided enough nitrogen as a fertilizer for that whole garden area for a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, so chicken poop has a lot of nitrogen in it. And that's why Michael Dahl was telling the story about his mom moving the chicken coop all over and how he hated that job as a kid, moving the chicken coop. But his mom knew that nitrogen, that was a great place to have her garden in. It was a great story. If you see Michael Dahl and you want to hear a good chicken coop story, that's a good one. So yeah, I'm going to make the chicken tractor and we'll move the chicken around, keep them away from the fox for a year or two. Maybe he'll just go away once the food source is gone. I don't know.
And hopefully.
Then, and then they can free range all over again. You know, it's a small hobby farm. We got food for ourselves, trying to grow more and more every year. It costs money to do that too.
It really does, because the apple trees are not cheap.
The apple trees are not cheap. So we had to save for these knowing that we were going to have an apple orchard. And then now that we're done with the apple orchard, I'd like to plant some plums. Not the native plums. We've already been doing that, but some of the other plums. But, we're paying about $80 for a fruit tree. And, I gotta save for that. And so, we try to buy 2 a year. And just over the years, making the land more of a small farm where you can just, have the food that you need right there. And it just take little baby steps. It'll never happen if you don't start, so you gotta start somewhere.
You do. I wish that we would have started sooner.
I do too.
Even 10 years ago would have been nice. I would have been 10 years younger. It is what it is. I would like to get a couple of more of my Wolf River.
Oh, yeah.
The Heritage apple. I'm fascinated by this apple of how long it's been around and how close it's been to our area. That the Wolf River, it's like calling my name. It's telling me that I need to plant more. I did find them online at a bare root.
The bare root stuff can get a little hairy, but I found, and you can look this up online too, you go to the University of Minnesota Extension and look up gravel bed systems for bare root plants. And basically what it is like planting your trees in pea rock, and you just water them. Doesn't talk anything about fertilizing them, providing nutrients. You build like a raised bed and you fill it full of like pea rock, and then you plant your trees in there and you just water them, and they put all their energy into growing roots instead of the tree. And then when you plant them the next year, you've got this nice healthy root system, which is the first thing you need. And then because they've been in a sterile, the pea rock is like a sterile environment, there's really no nutrients there other than the water you're providing. Then when you put them in a nutrient rich system like the ground, they just go to town and start producing bark and wood and start growing. So I think that first we should build a gravel bed somewhere, because I'd like to do that. They always have the tree giveaways where they give you the little bitty trees and they barely live. I would like to put those little bare root trees that they give away in the gravel bed system and see if you can't get a richer root base within a year, and then plant them in the actual ground the next year. And
so they stay in that pea rock all winter long?
Yes,
and it does not kill them?
No, apparently not. And this is being done in Minnesota. We were researching this when we were talking about putting in the apple orchard that is now in at Prescott. We have a 300 tree apple orchard in a village called Prescott here on Leech Lake. And we were doing some research, Keith Carnes, the forester, and I were looking at, do we want to do bare trees? Did we want, you know, what did we want to plant? And he's the one that brought up this gravel bed system. And I was like, are you serious? So I didn't believe him at all. So I went to town researching it, and I got to be the nerd on it. And he was like, I'm so over that. I don't want to do that. And I was still thinking about it, even for like the small fruiting trees and shrubs that he's been planting around the reservation. He's a great forester, and he's like planted 1,000 fruiting shrubs and stuff around, trying to provide food for folks. And so I was telling him, let's explore this and let's see if we can't increase the survival rate a little bit. So
that's interesting. I'll have to look into that, because I'm not sure. I don't understand how the roots survive the winter, because you would think that the roots would just freeze.
You would. And I remember thinking when I was, you know, this is a while back, I was researching, this was like February or something. I remember thinking that for the small fruiting trees and shrubs, you could make like a little hoop house over the gravel bed system so that it was warmer in there, and then
they would continue to grow then too. Yeah. So you would be actually giving them a longer season for growing.
Right. A couple months on either end of the growing season there with that little hoop house. So I think that's maybe the next project that I will undertake, is making a small gravel bed, so that whether you find Wolf River trees or I'm messing around with fruiting shrubs and stuff like that.
Well, there's all sorts of bare root. Actually, bare root trees are cheaper too.
Yeah, they
are. You're talking about an $80 tree from one of the local greenhouses, as opposed to buying a bare root tree for possibly $30 to $40. And if we did that with the gravel, then we could bring in grapes too, because grapes all come bare root.
Oh yeah. And then, so there you go, people. Go check out gravel bed systems for rooting plants, and you could really reduce your cost. You still got to build the gravel bed, but you could bring down your costs some, which is something we didn't know till last February. Help you build up your property, your place a little bit more with edible fruits and shrubs for yourself. And
the money that you saved on the buying bare root covers the cost for the gravel that you're going to need to make this bed. Go around, do your scrounging, find your scrap woods to make your raised bed. And that's what we do. We do a lot of scrounging and make things work. It may not be the prettiest, but it works.
That's why we have paint. Buy a bright color paint and make it look pretty. Well, that's about all I wanted to chat with you folks today. Go out there and make some habitat for the pollinators. Get some food for yourself and enjoy life. Talk to y'all later.
I hope to talk to y'all again real soon. We'll see you later.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.